Without further ado, I'm going to invite our guest speaker for tonight. He is Sheikh Ali Qummi from the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, and he is going to be talking about Palestine, the humanitarian and political aspect. Let's invite him with a salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir la'inir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين صلوات. If you all can, please recite a louder salawat, that'll be better. Thank you. So the holy month of Ramadan, we're blessed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to see it once again in our lifetimes. We thank Allah for giving us an opportunity to live through another blessed month of Ramadan. Truly, like many other blessings of Allah, we don't recognize the blessing of month of Ramadan. We take it for granted. We feel that it is something that comes every year. We feel that we live through it. We do a few rituals, do a few du'as, stay hungry, stay thirsty. And that's all there is to Mahe Ramadan. We have verses of Quran and a hadith of the infallibles and immaculate imams that inform us that this blessed month is a lifetime opportunity for us. Especially these nights that we just witnessed, the Layali-e-Qadr. This is something that if we don't benefit from them, we are truly at loss. But like they say, it's never too late. There's no reason for us to be hopeless. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is ready, and His mercy and the doors of His mercy, they are wide open, still wide open for all of us to walk through. For this tawfiq and this blessing to be able to walk through that door of mercy and receive the mercy from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, let's recite a salawat. I would like to request permission from our seniors, especially Ustad Rad Mard, that it is a jasarat that I'm setting up here, delivering a lecture. But we're so happy that you're here to attend this. I would like to seek permission from you to be able to speak and share a few words, inshallah, that I've prepared. Please recite a salawat. Brothers and sisters, the issue of Palestine, since the time we were born up until now, we've been hearing about this issue one way or the other. This is an issue that has been ongoing. It is like a dagger in the heart of the Muslim Ummah, a dagger that is penetrated so deep that we all feel the pain for the occupied Palestine by the Zionist regime. I have this opportunity to spend with you 2 days where I would like to go over a few things about Palestine that some of you may have heard already and some of you may not have. Today's session I would like to dedicate it to, as you have seen in the message, the humanitarian and the political aspect of Palestine. It's an atrocity, a humanitarian crisis that is unparalleled. And we would like to discuss a few of those points with you, along with the international politics. Why in the world Palestine ended up being what it is today? Why do we see Palestine in this dire situation? How did it all work out since the inception of Zionism. And I would like to bring you up until 2020. So this is today's session. And tomorrow's session, I would like to primarily dedicate to the ideological and the theological aspect of Palestine. We won't be talking any of that today, or most of it won't be here. Tomorrow we would talk about what Quran says when it comes to the issue of Palestine, what Ahadith say when it comes to the issue of Palestine, what do the Fuqaha of Islam say when it comes to the issue of Palestine, and what does it have to do with the reappearance of Imam Zaman alayhis salam. We will talk all that in the second session. But today, I'm going to take you back in history and inshallah make our way up together to 2020 and see how Palestine got to where it is. Let's start off with a first thing that I have prepared here. This is, if you can see on the screen, you all have smartphones, right? I would like you to pull out your smartphone. Some of them already have them out. If you pull out your smartphones and go to this website, pollev.com/AliAli989. The URL is written at top. Let's go to the first question that we have here. Can you see it? All right. How many Palestinians live in exile? Yes. No. So I need to see like what you guys think. What is our level of information when it comes to this issue of Palestine? How much do we know about it? Do we have any stats on us? So the correct answer over here is, it's changing apparently. Refresh it. For some it's working. Okay. So apparently, yeah, we have people changing their responses. So the correct answer here is 7.1 million people live in exile. 7.1 million Palestinians live in exile. Brothers and sisters, I would like you all to feel that you're one of those families, one of those individuals who are living in Palestine and they were exiled with their family. If you're not married, if you don't have kids, then think of your parents, think of your siblings. 7.1 million people we are talking here. It's not a small number. Sometimes people ask, why is it that Palestine is the main issue of the Islamic world? There's so many other things going on. Why is it that the leader keeps talking about Palestine? Why is it that the leader keeps emphasizing on the disaster that the Palestinians have faced? 7.1 million people. This is unprecedented. Let's go on to the next question. How many Palestinians are subjected to discrimination in the occupied Palestine? So they have this new entity now called Israel, the Zionist regime of Israel, the illegal and illegitimate Zionist regime of Israel. It's occupying this land, and there are still Palestinians living in that land. How many of them are subjected to discrimination? 1.7 is the correct answer. Again, imagine yourself and your families to be amongst them. How many people in West Bank live under military law and face home demolitions? Okay, all right. I hope the sisters are contributing towards it too, and they're paying attention. The reason I brought it up like this is because we have become numb listening to numbers, huge numbers, And we have seen like so many people going through so much that we have become numb towards it. But I wanted you to pay attention to the huge amount of population that is subjected to oppression by and at the hands of the Zionist regime. So this one is, the correct answer is 3 million plus. How many people in Gaza live under a brutal siege? You know, Gaza is a very small area. They have created a siege around it, so nothing can go in, nothing can come out. The humanitarian aid cannot get to these people. The basic necessities of their life cannot get to them. How many people? The correct answer is around 2 million. 2 million people. Brothers and sisters, for once, think of yourself, your family, your kids, to be amongst those 2 million people. How does it feel? This is what we are faced with. This is what Israel is. And look at this. People ask, why in the world do we keep shouting slogans like death to America, death to England, death to Israel? I'm sure you have heard about it. Many people, they're like, oh, no, these are rough edges. Let's not say these things. These are obsolete slogans. We don't need them anymore. Brothers and sisters, just recently in 2018, U.S. Senate approved an aid legislation for the Zionist regime. How much was it? It is $38 billion USD. This is all the while, especially those who are from the States, they would know, and others through media and news outlets, you should know, that there are places in America where there is no clean water to drink. There are schools which don't have basic necessities that students require. Yet, the United States of America spends $38 billion or approves this legislation. After today's presentation, hopefully, inshallah, most of you and many of our online viewers too, you would realize the reason why the United States of America is the great Satan. And we're not going to talk about Imam Khomeini, Imam Khamenei today. We're not going to talk about Hezbollah and IRGC and all this today. That's all tomorrow. Today I want you to feel when you interact with a secular person who doesn't have, you know, maybe any religion, any ideology, how do you deal with them? What do you explain to them? How do you explain the issue of Palestine to them? I see that many of our sincere brothers, they fail to explain the issue of Palestine the way it should have been explained to the secular world. Right? Today we are trying to present to you some of the history of why Israel is an illegitimate regime that needs to be toppled, that needs to be dismantled, that needs to be annihilated. The crimes of the Zionist regime in the region, not just on the occupied lands, but in the region, they're countless. And it is for humanity that we are proposing a dismantlement of this Zionist regime. Recite a salawat, please. Recite one more salawat, please. Output there. All right, so today we, like we said, we're going to talk about the humanitarian aspect, which we went over a few of the points that I felt were required for you to feel the pain of the average Palestinians living in Palestine. Now we're moving into the political aspect of this issue. So brothers and sisters, 1897 is it where it all begins. 1897. We're living in 2022. 1897 is when the modern political Zionism, the nationalist movement, it began to establish a Jewish state. Where does it emerge? It emerges in Europe, right? They come together, a bunch of Zionists, they plan that, okay, we're going to build this nationalist movement to establish a Jewish state. That's what was proposed. The first Zionist Congress was held in Switzerland. And they settled with the idea that they're going to colonize Palestine. That's what the plan is, right? And back then, Palestine, it used to be part of the Ottoman Empire, right? And this is what Palestine used to be. And they decide that, okay, we're going to take Palestine and we're going to colonize it. Then the Balfour Declaration comes, you know, with this modern political Zionism, which was a nationalist movement. Now there comes a Balfour Declaration, which I'm sure many of you have heard, but I want you to take notes or at least try to remember some of these things. Because when you're interacting with the secular people out there, non-religious people out there, you need all this information. UK's government, the United Kingdom, support for creation of a national home for Jewish people in Palestine. Okay, what are we talking about? We're talking about a UK government, and we're talking about Jewish people, and we're talking about Palestine. So UK government is talking about or is planning to launch and approve this movement where, you know, the creation of the national home for Jewish people is approved now. This is what is called Balfour Declaration. The fact of the matter is that 90%, more than 90% of the people living in Palestine at that time were Arab Muslims. Oh, Arab Palestinians. Now, how in the world can UK just decide that there is going to be a homeland for the Jewish people inside Palestine? Based on what? There's no rationale to it. There's no logic to it. Now, you know, we move forward, and with this Balfour Declaration, there's a period called mandate period. And in this mandate period, the Foreign Secretary, Arthur Balfour, he issues the Balfour Declaration promising UK government support for creation of a national home for Jewish people in Palestine, despite its inhabitants being more than 90% Palestinian Arabs. Now, this mandate period, you know, British rules Palestine till 1948. Well, again, the question is, what gives the right to the British to rule over Palestine? Isn't Palestine a free nation? Don't they have a right to exist? They rule Palestine until 1948. Then British crushes all the Palestinian revolts and uprisings because people don't like to be ruled by foreigners. So there were revolts, naturally, and they were all crushed by British. Then the Jewish immigration amongst all this, you know, this period, remember in your mind, it's going to go up until 1948, right? We're fast forwarding here. Jewish immigration to Palestine kept growing. So Jewish people from all over the world, they were brought to Palestine to stay there, to start living there. Post-World War II, Britain leaves, 1945 or something, right? After that, Britain leaves. And we're already in 1948. Palestine's responsibility gets handed over to the newly created United Nations. You're all familiar with it, aren't you? So now United Nations is supposed to manage and take care of this place called Palestine. Well, the question again is, why not Palestinians take care of their own land and their own country? What gives the right to British to hand over Palestine to United Nations now? Then the United Nations, it went ahead and created the Zionist state on 55% of what was historically Palestine. So this is where they started. They're like, okay, we're announcing a Zionist state in Palestine, which is going to be spanning over 55% of what is historically known as Palestine. Again, there's no checks and balances, if you notice. See, if you get these facts right, then tomorrow what we're going to talk about, it's going to make sense to you. The resistance is going to start making sense to you. If you don't know the history, then with the propaganda of the mainstream media, with the Zionists propagating and doing propaganda in their favor, you may not be able to make sense of resistance. You may not be able to make sense of slogans like "Death to America" and "Death to Israel." This background is important and essential, especially for the youth to know. I'm sure the elders, you know, because they lived through it, they know about it. But for the youth, for the newer generation, they don't know any of this stuff. So unless we educate them on this, they're not going to stay up to date. Now, the United Nations, it created this Zionist entity. A very small population of Palestine was Jewish at that time. But again, nobody asked, why in the world are you creating a new country out of thin air without any logic when they're not even people of that denomination living in that country? You're bringing in people from outside. Nobody is there to ask. Everybody's just too busy. Then we move on to the Nakba, the catastrophe. Well, the Zionist forces in 1948 and 49, and you should all know this, Nakba Day is commemorated every year by Palestinians and by the axis of resistance throughout the world. In 1948 to 49, they attacked Palestine, and it's called the Nakba, the catastrophe. The Zionist forces razed over 400 villages to ground. 400 villages we are talking about. Again, go back to that same question. What if you and your family were one of them? You were living in that village. What would happen to you, to your family, to your loved ones? 400 villages we are talking about. Even if they are small villages, just imagine how many families were displaced. More than 750,000 Palestinians driven out of their homes. Huge number. The Zionist regime occupied 78% of the historic Palestine by that time. And then what does the United Nations do? What they always do. They passed a new resolution. Okay, the resolution 194, which allows the return of the expelled Palestinians, you know, those exiled Palestinians. It gives them the right to return to their homeland. And what happens? The Zionist regime very casually disregards this resolution of the United Nations. And then what happens? Nothing. Yeah, it's as simple as this. Nothing. So a resolution gets passed against the Zionist regime, and they don't act according to that resolution, and there's no checks and balances. Then in return, what they do, they enforce the martial law, which remained until 1966. So look at 49 to 66, there's just a martial law, you know. You can't do anything, there's no elections, there's no, you know, people having any say, nothing. No, just the rule of military. Then we move on to the Six-Day War in 1967. So you may be thinking that Arabs, they must have fought back, right? And this is again something that you should go and look in history. Arabs did fight back. They did try to fight back, but they all failed. Because the Zionist regime of Israel was supported, funded, and provided ammunition, provided political immunity by the United States of America and UK. And of course, France, Germany, and these guys. Every single time, on every step of the way, the Six-Day War takes place, the Zionist regime occupied the West Bank. The Zionist regime then occupied East Jerusalem, and then they occupied the Gaza Strip. When is it? 1967. Now all of the historic Palestine was under Israeli control. In 1967, the United Nations again passes another resolution, Resolution 242, which requires Israel to withdraw from the occupied territories. What happens? Israel casually disregards it. More than 1 million Palestinians were forced into exile in 1967. Brothers and sisters, this is a slap on the face of the Muslim world. This is all happening while we're watching. The Muslim world is watching. The countries, the Muslim countries, the so-called Muslim governments are watching. This is all happening. The illegal Zionist settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories, it grows steadily. One of the things I want you to remember about Israel, which we again will touch up more on in tomorrow's discussion, is the expansionist nature of the Zionist regime of Israel. The philosophy Israel is built on is the philosophy of expansionism. So it's like a cancerous tumor, as Imam Khomeini, Rahbar, you know, other greats have called it, cancerous tumor. You don't uproot it, it keeps growing. It keeps growing. And this is exactly what we see with the Zionist regime of Israel. You know, the Fourth Geneva Convention, these illegal settlements were in violation of that. So in 1987, what happens is Palestinians are like, okay, we've had it enough, right? We're going to do the uprising, right? In Gaza and in some of the parts of Palestine, in 1987, the first Intifada launches. Intifada is the uprising, the first Intifada. 1948 is when the Zionist regime came into being, and 1987 is when the first Intifada is taking place. And that Intifada too, this uprising too, was with stones. They didn't have anything to fight back with. Mass Palestinian protests brutally crushed by the Zionist forces. And then this is where Hamas was formed. Because then the Palestinians are like, okay, we need to organize. We need to take a formal shape, offer resistance, which is going to fight back this illegal occupation. Because if we don't fight back, the only end result is that it keeps expanding and growing. So Hamas takes birth. And guess what? As soon as this Intifada happens and Hamas comes out of it, the United States of America, it becomes curious and concerned that, oh, now we see a resistance force rising up from within Palestine. And we all know who created Hamas. Again, it's more to do with tomorrow's discussion. The resistance, the spirit of resistance, where did Hamas get it from? They got it from Imam Hussein alayhi salam and their servants. Hamas and these Palestinians, they couldn't fight back these aggressors and oppressors up until they were supported, trained, and helped by the Islamic Republic of Iran and Wilayatul Faqih. But look, there's this entire Islamic world, and there's this small little place, Palestine, right, which is shrinking day by day. United States, all of a sudden, as soon as it saw that Hamas has formed, they're like, okay, we come into this whole thing as a broker. Now we're going to do like peace deals between the two of you. And this is where Oslo Accords take place. A series of agreements between the Zionists and PLO. PLO is what? Palestinian Liberation Organization. It was represented by Yasser Arafat. I'm sure you have heard his name. You know, Yasser Arafat goes to Washington, D.C. and signs a deal with, a peace treaty with, the Zionist and Zionist regime in 1993. And then the second one, he goes to Egypt, or some of the PLO members go to Egypt, and they sign another treaty, and those treaties are known as Oslo Accords. What is Oslo Accords? And this is where I would like you to pay attention. Oslo Accords is that you recognize Israel as a legitimate state. This is a pinching point for the Zionist regime. This is the pinching point for the great Satan, America. Please recite the salawat. Right? So, the Zionist regime of Israel, it is not a legitimate state. We have never accepted its legitimacy. And this is what bothers the Zionists. This is what bothers AIPAC. This is what bothers the United States establishment and government. They want Israel to be recognized. And guess what? Hamas doesn't recognize Israel. Why? Because it's not a legitimate state. Its very inception is illegal. So why should we begin to even recognize it? Oslo Accords, although, and if you have a discussion with a non-Muslim, let's say, they may throw this at you. So you may want to understand the dynamics, who Yasser Arafat was, what PLO's stance was, what Hamas' stance was, how do the two bifurcate? Why are the two different, right? These, after this Oslo Accords, the illegal settlements, they started to grow and they became twice in number during this peace process. You know, the peace process as the result of Oslo Accords. See how the United States of America is playing? As soon as it saw that the resistance is taking place in Palestine, and now we're going to get some punches back, they're like, let's make a peace deal, right? We need to have a peace process. And again, during that peace process, what do? They expand the Zionist regime, the illegal settlements. You know, PLO, basically, later on it's called PLA, PNA, which is the Palestinian National Authority. After Oslo Accords, PLO was, you know, it came out to be PNA. PNA is what? Mahmoud Abbas and these guys who the United States of America wants to be in government and they want them to be ruling what is known as Palestine today. Hamas says that all of it is Palestine. Israel doesn't have any existence. So naturally, they hate Hamas, the United States of America, the Zionists, they hate Hamas, but they're okay with PLO. You know, they say, oh, PLO or PNA, you know, interchangeably used, they should be, and sometimes it's also called Palestinian Authority, PA. They are the ones who are sensible people. They say we want to talk with them. Why? Because they do not believe in resistance. They're like, yeah, that's okay. You know, Israel, Zionists, that's fine. You know, they're powerful. We are out of choices, that sort of a thing. Now, this so-called mandate period comes. So what happens in the year 2000? The continuation of a brutal military rule by the Zionist forces. You know, they continue to grow and have their military intervention in the free Palestinian lands because they wanted to occupy them as well. The second intifada takes place. When? In 2000. This is where thousands got killed as Palestinian towns and refugee camps were invaded, shelled, and bombed. Right? Now, there is an occupying force that is trying to grow its occupation in the lands of Palestine. When they rise up, they get bombed, they get shelled. With whose money? With whose support? With whose political immunity? United States of America. IDF is just a puppet force. IDF has no value. What gives value to the Israelis is the United States of America and the camp of oppressors. You look at UK, you look at Germany, you look at France, they're the ones that empower the Zionist regime. Now, remember I said 87 first intifada, 2000 second intifada, right? Hamas was formed, now they're starting to organize. Now the camp of resistance is helping them out, not just from Iran, from other places too. What happens then? Well, Israel, it starts to build a wall around themselves. They say that there are security justifications for that. Because of those security concerns, they started to build the wall, segregating the Palestinian population from the Israeli, so-called Israeli population. Now, this is where I want you to pause for a second. Brothers and sisters, when the leader of the Islamic Ummah says that resistance is the only way forward, you should know what he means. Resistance took place. Result was what? This expansionist ideology of Zionism, it got contained to a point where they started building a wall around themselves. It was a result of what? Resistance. Armed resistance by the people of Palestine. You know, sometimes we're too naive. You know, we say, no. If we let Israel, you know, have what they have, you know, they're just going to stop oppressing people. They're going to stop doing injustice to people. No. Israel is a cancerous tumor. Its nature is to expand. It's built into its mechanism. The only thing that could contain Israel from growing is resistance. And sometimes people do ask, oh, by the way, you know, what has all this resistance for 70 years done for Palestinians? You know, what benefit did they have? Just a few more martyrs every time they do any uprising? Well, this is an answer for them. This resistance is the cause and reason for Israel to stop expansion. It started to contract. And by the way, if you go to the Zionist ideology, which we didn't go over in the beginning, its vision is to rule from Euphrates to Niles, or Niles to Euphrates. They said that all of this area belongs to us. It should be ruled by us. What has stopped, and this is a question for all of us, what has stopped the Zionist regime to fulfilling this dream? The only answer is, it is the resistance. It's the Islamic resistance. So, from expansion to survival. See how this journey took place, right? For the Zionist regime of Israel. 2004, the International Court of Justice. I'm not going to take too much of your time, inshallah. I'm coming towards the end. ICJ, the International Court of Justice, they declared the wall to be illegal. They ordered for its removal. And then, you know, what happened? As usual, Israel ignores what ICJ had to say. And then what happens? Nothing. Right? So it's just a formality. You should know and realize what these so-called international organizations, let it be United Nations, let it be the Security Council, let it be this criminal, you know, this Court of Justice, International Court of Justice, so on and so forth. All of these organizations are hoax. And we need a session one day to open up on the reality of United Nations and how United Nations legally and formally reports to the United States of America's army, military. This is who they report to. But sometimes we have these naive Muslims, you know, finding refuge with United Nations, dying to work with United Nations. Brothers and sisters, we need to get our act together. We need to get our facts together before it's too late. This International Court of Justice does this, Israel ignores it, and then what does it do? It creates those checkpoints. The ID system, I'm sure you have seen pictures. When I was making the presentation, I was thinking to put the pictures in. I didn't have enough time. But you must have seen like those small little alleys that they have created where only one person can stand, and then the other person is pressed against him. You know, there's not enough space to stand. Even throughout the coronavirus season, people who have to go back and forth through those checkpoints, just imagine what social distancing would look like. So they, you know, kept demolishing the houses, a segregated road network. All of these are separate topics that I don't have time to get into. The ID system that they created, the administrative detention. This is something I would like to comment on for a few minutes or for a second. Brothers and sisters, this administrative detention is the imprisonment without charge or trial. Again, I will repeat it. Imprisonment without charge or trial. Now the question is, what gives the Zionist regime right to detain anyone without pressing any charges or without him having the facility to go for a trial? First of all, we're challenging the very existence of the Zionist regime. But let's assume for a second, you know, even if you are a legitimate country, what gives you the right to detain the citizens of another country or of your own country without any charges? What gives you the right to do that? Brothers and sisters, Israel, the Zionist regime, is nothing short of a terrorist regime. This is who they are. They're just terrorists. They terrorize people. That's what they do for a living. That's what their motto is. And 70 years of their history, it bears witness to what I just said. It's a camp of terrorists. Now the Palestinian civil society, what do they do in 2005? They're like, okay, enough is enough. We're going to boycott Israeli products, right? So they launched this BDS movement. They gave a global call, and you must have heard about BDS. And, you know, to an extent, one can argue that it is something that was good done against the Zionist regime of Israel. And it was modeled after, you know, this BDS movement that freed apartheid South Africa, right? And this is where they get the ilham from. And I think it was a good thing that happened. Palestinian popular resistance movement, it kept growing in Gaza and West Bank. See, that whole plant that was planted in 1987, we are saying in 2005, now it's growing. This is how resistance works. Someday, you know, if we get an opportunity to talk about the creation of Hezbollah, you will see how it was created, how it was formed, and how it grew, all these different stages. Anyways, Palestinian popular resistance movement kept growing in Gaza and West Bank as well. And Hamas, you know, in 2006, and this is another interesting thing. Remember the PLO, PLA, PNA, and PA thing I said? I don't know if you remember. If you remember, recite a salawat, please. So Hamas won the elections. So there were like elections that took place in Gaza, and Hamas won it. And according to independent monitors, they said that it was free and fair elections. Now this was a bad news for the United States of America, because United States, they were pushing for PLO, PNA, PA, Mahmoud Abbas and these guys. And Hamas, which is resistance, it became the popular movement in the occupied territories. So people voted for Hamas. They saw their future with Hamas. United States of America doesn't like it. And this is where it's going to get more interesting now. I know it's a bit dry and boring presentation, but I think these facts are important for us to know before we engage in this whole issue of Palestine. If we don't have facts and figures on our hand, then it just remains an emotional attachment, which again is not bad, but this is not enough, honestly, in today's time and age. The Zionist regime, what does it do? It abducts 35 Palestinian MPs. Remember how I said they're nothing short of terrorists? Zionism is terrorism. You know, and you've heard these slogans, but now you know why these slogans are chanted. Who abducts 35 MPs of a country? Only Israel can do that. Imposing a complete blockade of Gaza, subjecting Gaza to major attacks, destroying the only power plant that they had. These are the things that took place in 2006. 2008 and 9, Operation Cast Lead is what they called it. It was a attack by the Zionist regime on Gaza. And it lasted for 3 weeks. And I think this is kind of where most of us would remember, we can recall, you know, this was happening while we were kind of growing up, right? 2008-09. They called it Operation Cast Lead. They destroyed 25% of the buildings in Palestine. killed over 1,400 Palestinians, killed over 300 children. It was just flat out bombing. It was not surgical strikes or anything. No, it was on the mainstream Palestinian population that they dropped bomb. And if you remember, there was phosphorus chemical attacks, phosphorus warfare that they committed, which is illegal in terms of international law as well. The Goldstone report, it condemned Israel for war crimes. Israel's stated goal for this war was stop Palestinian rockets, and Israel failed. They couldn't stop their rockets. At the end of this war, if you all remember, IDF begged for a unilateral ceasefire. So it was a victory for the Palestinian resistance. Now, I've been talking for like 40, 45 minutes. When did we talk about Palestinian being victorious? This is the first time. This is the first time in all those years that the Palestinians, they were able to get something, gain something, which was a victory. Otherwise, it was Israel, all along Israel. Whatever they wanted to do, they wanted to loot their houses, they wanted to demolish their houses, they wanted to kidnap their women, they wanted to rape their women, anything, like any kasif thing that you can think of, Israelis committed it. The only thing that stopped them was this resistance. Now, 2010, Gaza was put under siege. Remember, Hamas is housed in Gaza. This is like the center location for Hamas, right? Now, America is not liking Gaza, and Israelis, they surely don't like Gaza. So they're like, what? Block it. There's the siege. Then if you remember, there were flotilla ships that were sent to Palestine, and they were going to take the humanitarian aid. This flotilla, which was a peaceful convoy, even, George Galloway and these guys, they went on this flotilla as well, where they were involved in it. They got attacked. This peaceful flotilla gets attacked. And then what happens? The crew members, nine of the crew members of this flotilla, they were killed, massacred by the Zionist regime. Now, this is where the international outrage spurs the growth of BDS movement. 2012, Operation Pillar of Defense, Israel attacked and bombed Gaza. 170 plus innocent people were killed, hundreds wounded, more than 1,500 sites were struck. Israel's goal in this one was disarm resistance in Gaza. Guess they have a lot of problem now that is housed in Gaza at the hands of Hamas and, of course, Jihad-e-Islami and other resistance. When I'm saying Hamas, I'm just saying one name. Because Fatah went with PLO. Hamas is the resistance, right? So now they're like, okay, our objective, our goal is to disarm Hamas. Why would you want to disarm them? So we can freely bomb them, so they cannot retaliate. When the leader says, when Imam Khamenei says that resistance is the only option and choice against the Zionist regime, this is what he means. He knows that when there is no resistance, the Palestinians cannot defend themselves. Israel failed once again, and another victory for Palestinian resistance. Operation Protective Edge, 2014. 51 days assault on Gaza. 2,000 plus innocents killed. Israel's goal was again to disarm resistance in Gaza. Now they're insisting. They're like, we want to disarm this resistance. They shouldn't have rockets. They shouldn't have ammunition. They shouldn't have anything that they can retaliate with. And if you notice, the only country which is formally standing with the resistance in Gaza is the Islamic Republic of Iran. They believe in their right to defense. And hence, Iran has been paying price for it. Israel once again failed. They couldn't disarm the resistance. And then, 2017 to 21, this is very recent and you all know about it. That's why I'm just going to read through it. Trump formally recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel in 2017. In 2018, the US embassy was moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. In 2018, IDF kills more than 260 Palestinians in Gaza during the Great Return March. 28 January 2020, the deal of the century, or rather, we call it the steal of the century. 12-day war in 2021, Sheikh Jarrah, you remember last year, Sheikh Jarrah was attacked by IDF right around the same time, I believe, right? It was Maher Ramadan or right around this time. The war lasted for 12 days, and the Palestinian resistance responded with might and strength, and the victory of Palestinian resistance materialized once again. So brothers and sisters, if you notice, you know, this whole idea of the Zionist regime, which was there to grow, how it is now shrinking, how it is now creating walls against around it, right? How it is being troubled by the resistance in Palestine. This is where, if you look at the general perception throughout the world, you look at the even Western countries, the anti-Israel sentiment is unprecedentedly high. Now this is, these are the golden times. And if you remember, Rahbar has already said that it won't be more than 25 years that Israel would get to last. Right? And that, I think it comes out to be 2040 is the max. If we do what is required, according to many analysts, not just in Iran, even in the Western world, they're seeing the collapse and downfall of the Zionist regime, which is going to happen very soon, inshallah. I have this one last question for you. If you can vote on what you think should be done with the Zionist regime after knowing what you know. Okay, so apparently it's not refreshing again. Technical glitch. I'll just summarize it, brothers and sisters. We believe that the only future for the Zionist regime is dismantlement, destruction, annihilation. Now you may think, oh, what's going to happen with all those Jews? As the leader has said, ma Yehud satiz nistim. Those Jews can continue to live with the rest of the Palestinians, like they were before the inception of this cancerous tumor, like they are in other parts of the world, wherever they exist, even in the Islamic Republic of Iran. What's so hard for them to just live with others side by side? So this is what we're looking at, inshallah. And in conclusion, you know, I know you're all tired and I'm done. We would like to chant a few slogans in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Palestine. And these slogans, after you know the facts, they're not mere emotions. In Islam, we have problem with mere emotions which are baseless and illogical. When you have the logic for something, then you should not be shy to roll up your sleeves, make a fist, and wave it in the air, and from the bottom of your heart, if you're convinced, say, resistance is justified when people are occupied. You're going to say it together. I'm going to repeat it once more. Resistance is justified when people are occupied. Now you're going to say it. Resistance is justified when people are occupied. Resistance
is justified when people are occupied.
Resistance
is justified when people are occupied.
And the sisters can join in too. There's no harm in it. And even Islamically speaking, there's no problem with it when you're raising your voice for the oppressed, like Sayyida Zainab Salamullah Alayha. You have to say it too. Resistance is justified when people are occupied.
Resistance is justified.
When people, the second slogan I want you all, inshallah, to raise, you had a good iftar, so inshallah, with strength, I'm not requiring from the elderly and from the teachers, but at least the young brothers, inshallah, they would shout together, no justice, no peace.
No justice, no peace.
No justice,
no peace.
No justice,
no peace.
And then the global slogan, the global and the rational and the logical slogan according to Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, debt to America. And just before we say this, you know, debt to America does not mean debt to American people. Debt to America does not mean debt to American civilians. Debt to America means debt to arrogance, in the words of Imam Khamenei. Debt to America means debt to this regime, this supporter of terrorism throughout the world. Debt to America means debt to imperialism. Debt to America means debt to racism. Debt to America means debt to United States of America's governments and its politicians and those who are helping them. So together we are going to say debt to America and inshallah raise our fists once again in the air. Debt to America!
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 Debt to America! And as the leader has said, that America rube ufulast. And we're going to see the collapse of this Titanic, inshallah, very soon. And again, it's a topic for another day. Another ilahi and another divine slogan that the Islamic Revolution has provided us with is death to England, because they're accomplice. They're an accomplice in everything America is doing today. Every crime of America, England is there. And if you remember, like from this presentation, when did it all start? It all started with the British Mandate, right? So this used to be at least the head of the snake. So we're inshallah going to chant this Ilahi slogan as well. Death to England!
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 And last but not the least, five times, we're going to say, death to Israel!
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 I would like you to raise your hands in dua for the safety and protection of the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, for the safety and protection of the Islamic Republic of Iran, for the safety and protection of the axis of resistance, for the safety and protection of all the resistance forces that exist throughout the world, not just in Palestine. We haven't talked about Lebanon and other things that were happening during those years on purpose, because I wanted to stay focused on Palestine. But inshallah, we pray for all the resistance forces, and we pray that the Hawza starts supporting the resistance the way it deserves to be supported. And inshallah, for the Qabooliyat of this dua, we recite Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.